Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name is Dylan. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. In this episode, we are featuring Mycanids.
The Monster Manual states that Mycanids are intelligent, ambulatory fungi that live in the Underdark, seek enlightenment, and deplore violence. If approached peacefully, Mycanids gladly provide shelter or allow safe passage through their colonies.
We are joined by Jen De La Vega. Jen is a community-oriented caterer and recipe developer based in Brooklyn, New York. Her most recent projects include Filipinix by Angela De Mayuga and Ligaya Michan, as well as One Piece, Pirate Recipes. Outside the food industry, Jen serves on the board of directors for The Tank and Death by Audio Arcade. She also voices Vivian Lakewood on the narrative play Shadowrun podcast, Fun City. You might catch her as a guest player on Fortunate Horse and Slay Die's Atlanta One-Shots. And you can find her on social media at Randwiches and on Twitch every Wednesday at JDE LaVegs. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
We are really excited for this one. I am particularly excited because Dylan's going to be an expert on cooking and mushrooms, and I am going to know a little teeny bit, and you are going to know a lot, and we're going to get through this one.
Well, I hope that you learn a bunch. I hope that you learn a bunch from this.
I am the perfect vessel. I am the audience knowing nothing, eager to learn.
Ooh, that's kind of perfect for Mycanids. Willing vessel.
Speaking of which, Jen, can you tell the people what Mycanids are?
Definition from the book. They are intelligent ambulatory fungi that live in the Underdark. They prioritize enlightenment and they seek knowledge. They do not like violence, which is fascinating, because how do we define violence? I don't know. But I sort of think of them like sea anemone colonies, because they have very specific jobs for each part of the organism. And they work together as a colony to keep accumulating. So they have a leader called the Sovereign, and that's kind of like the mother brain. And they have very specialized colonies or melds or like larger organisms within the community, and they can do different things like administer hallucinations or I got this wrong last time. It's not paralysis, but it's pacifying.
Which is a much nicer way. It's like, it really kind of underlines how peaceful they are. They're not even willing to freeze you in place so you can't harm them. They're just like, no, it's fine. Hey, look, don't you feel nice? Yeah, isn't this calm?
Yes, I think if you don't act antagonistic toward them, they will just be chill. Just kind of sneak by, or even just casually walk by.
I think you could. I think you could just like kind of casually walk through like a whole cavern of them, and they might look up and, you know, check you out. You know, they're probably really good at reading your vibe, right? And then as long as you got
check.
A good vibe, yeah, wow. Then you can just walk right through.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go into the room full of mushrooms and you decide whether you're going to have a good trip based on the energy you bring in.
Or a bad trip.
And they decide if you're going to have a good trip or not based on the energy you bring in.
You mentioned, like, how do you define violence? And, like, there is kind of a weird morality to Myconids in that, like, when you look at the abilities the Sovereign has, they do hallucination spores, pacifying spores, rapport spores, and I think the rapport spores are the things that let them do telepathy with people.
Yes, that's their way that they communicate.
It's all very, like, we might mess with your perception a little bit, but otherwise it's like calm you down, just be able to communicate, and also reanimate the dead sometimes to create zombie servants.
Yes, I found that really fascinating.
Makes sense just on mushroom biology. You get a lot of mushrooms infesting, like, fucking anything. Mushrooms will do whatever they want, but...
Yeah, isn't there, like, a fungus or a bacteria that cats have that, like, make you do their bidding?
Oh, they got me. I know they have me. Anytime I see any cat picture, I'm, like, locked in for 20 minutes. They have me.
So what, do your bidding, I feel like, is an exaggeration of the state of the situation. And also, Aram, you cannot catch a parasitic fungus from a photo on the internet.
No, I'm saying they got me so good. No, they got me so good that I can just look at a photo and I'm like, I'm worshiping this cat for the next 20 minutes. That's how much the fungus is burrowed into my brain. Willingly, I've helped it.
There's that one, and there's the mushroom that gets ants that they used as the basis for the game Last of Us, where it, like, infects them, makes them climb up a tree, and then just bite there and wait to die, and then the mushroom grows out of the ant's body.
But that's taking over a living creature. This isn't that. This is just infecting dead things. If you live underground in caves, there was a fascinating radio lab story about an ant colony that a family bought. And what they don't tell you on the ant colony box is that all these ants are going to die. First of all, there's no way for them to actually become a colony. It's just an exercise in watching ants die. And one thing the ants do immediately is as soon as an ant dies, they pick it up, they walk it to the furthest part of their little tunnel system they have, and they make a little pile of dead bodies. They have to get them away from the colony. It's instinctual. So this ability is probably just they see something dead, like, oh, got to get out of here, and they just send it on its way.
I mean, that's sort of part of a mushroom's natural life is decomposition, and that's so vital to the world, you know? Like, we create a lot of waste, and they're doing their part.
They're probably sending it to the kitchen.
That's the bit where I think you might have been wrong, Rom. I think this isn't sending the corpses away. I think they're getting, like, extra servants, because it's like, ambulatory mushroom walks into town, maybe freak out a little bit. That would trip me out.
Right.
But if you send a guy into town and he just drags back any of the dead people that you're not using, you don't need them.
Yeah.
It's like DoorDash, but for the mushrooms, right?
What if every undertaker in every movie is just that, like a servant of Myconids?
They're all really efficient. It's free to get rid of a body. Like there's this, it's so helpful.
Is this why they're not personable, like morticians?
Right, because they're just a bunch of mushrooms underneath the lab coat.
Mushroom brain. Yeah.
It's that weird thing where, like, you don't think about it too hard, so you don't realize that he's communicating telepathically. Like, if you really looked, you would notice the mouth isn't moving, but, you know, he's always looking down and just doing his job, so you don't
catch
it.
He's got a mask on.
Spooky.
At all times. How would you even know, right?
See, this is the weird thing to me. I appreciate it. I like it when D&D goes kind of off what you expect, but, like, these monsters are horrifying to me. Like, I can think of so many spookity things to do with a mic in it, especially, like, they're seizing control of corpses, they're messing with, like, hallucinations, they live specifically in the dark, spooky places.
Yeah.
Or take them out of the Underdark, throw them in a forest, because, like, spooky forest mushrooms stealing zombies. Terrifying.
I mean, they love logs and, like, the
Absolutely.
Underbrush, and so I feel... Yeah, why is it limited so much to the Underdark?
Yeah, if there was a real thick canopy of vegetation overhead, I don't see why you couldn't find one lounging by the bank of a river, all filled with color and light. I mean, it's you could have
get weirdly pretty sometimes.
Yeah, you could have like a little rainbow mic in it hanging out by the lake.
There are like hundreds and hundreds of varieties of kinds of mushrooms, so they can have different forms too. Like they don't have to have that. You know, Super Mario cap or Amanita shape. Like they can look like blue oysters. They can look like coral. They can look like puffballs and koosh balls. Like they can have so many different shapes.
What I was reading up on mushrooms, how like the parts that pop up aren't individual things. The parts that pop up are frequently are like part of a larger thing underneath. So as far as like how, yeah. So as far as they've had this set up, then would the larger thing be like the one in charge and the little sprouts would be kind of the pawns in this setup? Like, is there already kind of the mechanisms built into how they exist that you could then interpret that into this hierarchy that they have here?
Absolutely. Yes. During the pandemic, I found this company. It's called Smallhold, and they're a mushroom farm. And you can buy a block and grow the mushrooms at your home. And I learned a lot from this process. So it's a bunch of wood shavings that are soaked and then inoculated with the mycelium. And so it's just this white block. It looks like a very thick stem of a mushroom. And you expose certain parts of it to air and spritz it. And then they develop these things called pins, which are the beginnings of those like pawn mushrooms. And as they grow, this is the fascinating thing about mushrooms in general is it may be slow moving on paper, but you know, once it gets going, it's kind of a logarithmic growth and it's called a flush when it becomes the actual like head of mushroom that you can harvest. And it's really cool to watch because you can keep regrowing from this organism. So once you've cut off the mushrooms you're going to eat, you can expose another area to the air and it will respirate. And this is what's so crazy about mushrooms is you can dry them and rehydrate them. They are like sponges. And so this is something that I was thinking about in the book, like, why can't they travel? Like, why can't they hook on to other people or animals that are with you, because that's kind of what happens in real life.
If they're part of this network, if this network exists and they're thinking mushrooms and this passes a lot of information, then there's no reason a mushroom can't just touch the ground, right? There's no reason a mycotid can't just touch the ground, close its eyes and concentrate and communicate with everything around them, because they can tap into this network of information, and like they'll know what the weather's like to the west. They'll understand. There's all these things they can tap into just by focusing for a moment. They shouldn't just be individual creatures.
How do they agree? if there are multiple sovereigns, wouldn't they have different schools of thought and philosophies by what they've absorbed?
Again, we come back to like the idea that these are there's some form of neutral. Are these things lawful or chaotic? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, they are these lawful, are neutral.
Lawful, neutral.
Neutral, yeah.
So they have hierarchy and order.
These things must go to war.
Yeah, it would be like ants. How like ant colonies bump up against each other and then fight for territory. Although they don't fight. So I guess negotiate for territory. Exchange gifts for
absorption.
Territory.
Yeah. It's like one exerts philosophical dominance over another.
Dance-offs. There's Mykonoid dance-offs.
The slowest moving dance-off ever.
It's all the robot.
You know, I wonder how they experience time. Like, maybe to them, it is normal, and we're just moving a little too fast for them. And so they think it's a threat. Even movement's a threat to them.
Well, you were saying that mushrooms grow very, very, very slow and then very quick.
Yes.
For a period of times. Perhaps this stage of them, where we're interacting with them as people, this is just the quick time.
Yeah.
It doesn't last that long. That's why they don't live long. But this is the only time we can really interact with them. Otherwise, we're separated by time.
They're not given full, like, hive mind status, but they're also all telepathically linked all the time when they're nearby. So there's also, like, a wildly warped perception of time if, like, to make it sort of like a computer problem, you can only process so many calculations per second. So if you've got 10,000 myconids and a myconid brain can only process 100 events per second, you are trapped, you know, 100 seconds ago, perpetually, where you're still processing all of the information that came out from all of the edges that's also distorted in time because it had to travel all the way to get to you. You get a weird, like, relativity aspect to it, where, like,
it's like sunlight, you know, we're yeah. receiving sunlight yeah. 8 minutes ago. That kind of thing.
You have a myconid who at once is experiencing whatever it, like, as in air quotes, individual is experiencing, but it's also getting everything that the guy 4 miles away was experiencing an hour ago without any direct communication with that individual, which creates just the wildest bullshit perception of time.
Just always kind of distracted. Or like, kind of like an operator, like air traffic control.
Or even like, that could justify the sovereign thing, because if you get to a certain point and you just break out of it where it's like, no, now I have all the information I gained over the course of my life and I am just processing my experiences and going. Like, that's how you hit leadership, is one of them just breaks out, gets to be the biggest, and is like, no, now I'm making decisions.
And with that decision comes control of the population. It says in the rule book that they reproduce by mundane sporing, and they carefully control the release to avoid overpopulation. So they think about this, like our collective capacity.
They take on a lot of responsibility, but it doesn't really describe that process, does it, Dylan?
Mm-mm.
They do just break out, and like all of a sudden there is one. Does it
yeah.
fight the other one? Is there a war? But if they're not violent creatures, then do they just, does another creature just have enough good ideas where they all just start to lean towards the new one? Like, is it a very peaceful transition of power?
Oh, that's an entire adventure module, man. Like, because this is, again, this comes up over and over again. The way D&D parses, like, information for adventures and for monsters is interesting. There's, like, a baseline assumption. And the assumption in Myconids is there is a sovereign. If I go in and I kill the sovereign and I leave, how do they get a new one? Like, what's the succession? Who steps up? Is it completely arbitrary? Because they are sort of a hive mind, so I guess it doesn't really matter. But also, how does one just grow? Do a bunch of them grow at once? And the moment 6 of them have grown to that size and all of them have become individuals, do we have to do a quick civil war?
Just a quick civil war.
Just quick civil war. You never know.
Okay, I have an idea here. So Myconids spend 8 hours in like this shared dream state. It's kind of like they're, well, not 8 hours, but they, what was the time? They spend time in this shared
dream state. They spend some amount of time sinking.
They spend some amount of time in this shared dream state.
They're on their charger. They're yeah. sinking to the great drop box in the sky.
The Myconid Sovereign is the only one that can, the only ones that can produce these hallucination spores, right? If this dream state is so important to them, perhaps it's the ones where their dreams manifest strongest. They have the most power, and then they're so connected to them that they can manifest these dreams in their waking state. And therefore, by carrying these dreams forward, they become the new leaders because they can walk in dreams but awake.
That is weird philosophical bullshit. I like it. That isn't a complaint.
Make me part of your colony. That's yeah, another right? thing. That's another thing. I want to know how symbiosis works with other organisms because... fungi can live harmoniously with lots of different creatures, including like yeast. By nature, spores are kind of packaged specifically to survive unfavorable conditions. And once they reach a favorable condition, much like any kind of botanical seed, they will sprout. I want to incorporate more travel if people are going to use these organisms, like... And, you know, it could really be something that sneaks up on you. You could go for years in a campaign and then walk into a dank cave and all of a sudden, like, something from your armpits, like, hello.
The best way to give the party a pet is, like, level 2, you give them a bag of holding and you put them in the Myconid territory. And then one day they just open it and a sprout just kind of crawls
Hi.
Out.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
You don't wash the inside of your bag often enough.
That's gross. You should wash your bags.
They've made like a little home. They've just arranged everything into like a little apartment.
I love that.
Jen, I know your background is more Shadowrun than D&D. The mm-hmm. Shambling Mound is essentially a giant wet bush that hates everything.
Have you seen Fraggle Rock?
Yes.
You know the trash heap?
Oh, yeah.
You know the heaps? That's a Shambling Mound.
Yeah. They are, they're not just immune to electricity. If you electrocute them, they get stronger.
Oh, wow.
It's the same sort of thing where, like, you get the Myconids and the spores travel fast far enough. Like, this is a thing that just, like, engulfs and consumes, but it's also a giant wet plant. You can hit those weird bits of symbiosis where now you have a hyper-enlightened mushroom growing on a thing that's constantly eating it and also being communicated with it telepathically. And you can create this weird symbiotic, like, build plant venom.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about how spores are in general are transported. And a lot of the times, spores have different shapes. They have, like, hooks. They have barbs sometimes. So they can hook onto fur. So if there are anyone in the party that has fur or any kind of pelt on, those are, you know, perfect trans, it's like a bus.
And then just like, if we're talking about how they, you know, how they work with other organisms, that network directly connects them to trees. They exchange information and nutrients with them. The treants would have a wood wide web. They would be able to communicate with, that's not mine. That's not mine. I did not invent that. I cannot take credit for that.
I'm gonna fight them.
There was a scientist. It was a scientist.
Dylan's gonna jump out of your chair and through the screen.
Coming to botany conferences, just trying to track down one old man.
Via the wood wide web, they would be able then to communicate with each other over massive distances. And I could easily see how there would be a little network of, like, you know, you have to send a letter, right, to the woods to the north, so it's going to cost you 10 grams of sugar. Or sap, or whatever it ends up being, whatever that, you know.
Yeah, how do they perceive value? Like, that is really interesting. Like, so how do they perceive violence, and how do they perceive value, and what is valuable knowledge to them? Like, they want to accumulate, but how do they know what is good knowledge and what is bad knowledge?
Okay. Quick update, Suzanne Simard, I'm coming for you. Gonna come to BC.
You looked it up.
When fungi and plants make these connections with each other, they can decide how much nutrients they're passing. They can decide what flow it is, what rate it is, and they can watch. Is like if one shuts down, the other one shuts down. Like they actually respond to each other constantly. It's this kind of flowing back and forth. I don't see why they wouldn't be able just to, like, almost maybe pass information. Like if we had to think about every single thing our bodies do, we'd be able to do nothing else. Some of this stuff is just like breathing. It's just like their blood going back and forth. They're not always making a decision on every single connection. Some of it is just kind of understood.
This just fascinates me so much. Like, how do they know what they're pursuing is correct? How do they compare information and how do they decide, like, that is the right course of action? Because, you know, what if we have, like, an incel mushroom?
How does anyone look at all of these people that get thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people believing in them and supporting them for the worst ideas? I mean, there would be sovereigns with really bad ideas.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a sovereign be like, I'm going to go do my own research?
Yeah. Look, according to my own research, heat's not that bad for us, guys.
Yeah.
I think we should dig closer to the volcano. It's going to be fine.
Okay, so we saw the servants getting burned by the sun, and we just need to try this 100 more times. And
those guys were betas. If we're just a little tougher, we're going to be
chosen,
fine.
If we were chosen, then we'll survive the sunlight.
That's right. Christ.
Like, it could be very culty very quickly.
Especially because they can hallucinate, right? So if the guys in charge can make mass hallucinations, if they're not good, that can be easily warped. They're basically King Gaslight.
You can do a whole, like, the invention of lying thing where, like, the telepathy for, like, general Myconids means I can exchange my interpretation of information. If I can cause a hallucination, I can make you experience the thing I experienced. I can get near to perfect information transfer. Or I can lie.
Or I can lie.
If they all exchange so much information that as a colony, they simply have to accept a lot of base information, and one Myconid can figure out how to manipulate that base information so you just accept it as truth, they could become very powerful very quickly.
Oh my God.
One corrupted Myconid could cause a lot of damage.
This just reminds me of the scene in The Fifth Element. You remember that movie?
I'm gay in 46. Yes, I remember The Fifth Element.
You know when Leeloo discovers the internet sort of near the end and she looks up Google's war and just is like,
yeah, oh shit.
Like, what keyword is the Myconid gonna, like, just have a mental breakdown?
Risotto.
Risotto. Mushroom risotto.
This is what they do. To the surface.
Are Myconids monsters?
Oh, in D&D, they have such a wide definition of what a monster is. Anything you roll against, even climbing a mountain is a monster in this definition. But I also have a problem with the dictionary definition, which is like imaginary, large, typically ugly and frightening. This reminds me of a conversation I had recently about are oysters monsters, because they can absorb and break down material and they don't think about it. They only have nerve nets. They don't have brains. They don't have that capacity to make a decision. They just do.
They're tiny little contained gray goos.
Is a Venus flytrap a monster? That is a terrible way to perish. But it's not thinking about it. It's not considering your very slow, agonizing death. But it's not a monster. It just does monstrous things.
That's something I think does not get enough play in D&D, because the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, monstrous Myconids. Having Myconids that just, like, for whatever reason, this whole philosophical hive mind arrived at a gross conclusion and decided, like, no. We're going to consume the sun.
Just need a lot of us.
Stop me.
Yeah. Can you imagine being a traveling party standing on the sideline being like, we're just going to go let them do that?
They seem really convinced.
You go ahead and try.
Hang on, I'll get a ladder.
I'll help you.
You know those things die if they're exposed to the sun, and they were like, no, we're going to build a ladder to the sun and kill it. I'm not going after that.
How would you change the mic in it?
I want to bring in a lot of the real life, like adding a power called flush, you know, when they have that logarithmic growth that they can just like pop up, but then, you know, it has a cool down period or something like that. To create more entities and be able to pursue more servants if you wanted to. I would really take away the sun sensitivity or be able to give them some kind of like body sunglasses.
Or at the least bit, have a couple different types. Like maybe there are some that love to only exist underground, so they have these abilities. And there are some that exist above ground, so they have these abilities. Like maybe separate them out a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just like you dehydrate a mushroom, it gets a lot more like leathery. It gets a little harder. So you could even just do the simple, like if it is underground, it is soft. It can move easily.
Yes.
It's got a little higher speed. It goes outside. It gets higher armor and it moves a little slower.
Slower and it gets bark skin. That's perfect.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, that mimics, you know, how mushrooms act in real life. You know, hydration. they just need to be spritzed every now and then.
That's also such a cool little like thing to be able to do in a fight. Like one of the most trivial druid spells is create water.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if you're fighting a Myconid, you can't get hits in, and then the druid just kind of splashes them and they rehydrate and suddenly, oh no, that's squishy. I can cut that in half.
It could also be like a defensive tactic. Like if they just have to plug certain holes in their tunnel in case of invasion, you've got guys who are like going on no water for 3 days. They can move 10 feet around, but they're like stone and they just advance through the tunnel like a shield wall.
What I would change about Myconids is I want a full fucking Myconid book. Just
more
Myconid material.
Yeah, I want a whole build out of how their society works, how the network works, how the different hierarchies work, how they all talk to each other. Yeah.
You know what I would want if we had this, you know, this Myconid book? I would want a decision tree of, you know, how does it prioritize information and what does it value?
What a cool tool for a DM. I've never seen that in a book.
Especially because you could do a couple of them. Because it depends on who you're talking to. It depends on the information they've processed. But like,
how would you do it, Jen? How would you make one for Myconids?
I mean, it would kind of be like a worksheet because you would have to know the party you're dealing with. And that's the available knowledge, you know, in the scenario. And then like assign like yes or no questions or roles to each, like, you know, kind of like a bracket style of like, okay, this warrior's perception and state of mind is our North Star, and everything else is in opposition to it. And how cool would that be? Because you don't know which one you're going to end up with.
It would really help make the creature feel more alien too. If you took some of the choices, map them out as like, if this happens, then X happens. So you can like, I can now find my way into thinking how this creature thinks because I have a roadmap in front of me that helps me get into that mindset.
And it would be steadfast, you know, because it wants to pursue knowledge. It will just, without question, act in that way.
That's the other major thing, is at the end of the day, if you treat each individual Myconid, anything that isn't the Sovereign, as sort of those mushroom sprouts.
Yeah, because it could always make more.
There is no individuality. Like, those beings aren't really alive.
Yeah.
They're just part of the whole.
Yeah, and I mean, that brings up, you know, how expendable it is.
If it's that kind of creature, then it's really like puppets or like just a bunch of different fingers, right? Well, I lost one, but I've got 20 more.
I can regenerate. You know, it's like a starfish, yeah.
But if it is more of like a shared society thing, then they're individual. They're just probably extremely stubborn. Like, nope, sorry, this is how we do things. They're like, no, here's some more new information. Nope, this is how we do things. Sorry.
They do feel each other's pain. They have a shared pain, which they want to avoid at all costs.
If we all felt each other's pain, we would be a much different society.
Ooh, yeah.
Hopefully a better one. Maybe not. Maybe a worse one.
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's not. Let's just...
I've made us all sad again. Yay.
Okay.
Who's the bummer on this podcast? Let me just take a wild guess.
95% of the time, it's not me, but that 5%, I really do drag us down.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay. So that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
So, Jen.
Yes.
Your people, your cell colony, whatever group noun you happen to like for mushroom folks, existed in caves for a very, very long time. Relatively recently, we're going to call it, let's say, 6 months ago, you came to the surface. You've been in a forest for a little while now. I want you to tell me why. What was the push that made you resettle?
We call this day the brightening. An adventurer had come through the Underdark and had memories of frolicking in pastures. And memories of sunflowers growing to over 6 feet tall, all nourished by the sun. Why can't we know this? Shouldn't we know everything?
The memories, when you see them, like, you know, Mike and Itz have been to the surface before, and too much sun can be a problem. There's the dehydration. But you've seen the structures, the man-made canopies and caves that they've created, and you know, like, just the right skill set, and you could create a home.
Perfect. We saw the most beautiful one. It looked a lot like Mother. An umbrella-like cap, you know, with frills. Slowly but surely emerged onto the surface.
And since then, you've been settled in the forest, and you began the work. Aram, tell me a little bit about your present monstrosity.
So, Zilki is a goblin. Zilki is a goblin druid, a hermit, if you will, an outsider of outsiders who lives his life in the forest and in all the deep, dark crevices and the top of the branches and the hilltops. All of outside is Zilki's domain. And Zilki's a great philosopher and a great knower of things. And if you have problems that lurk in the dark or lurk in the deep things that you don't know, Zilki will come along and fix all of it for you.
Well, I congratulate you. You started off strong and I was like, oh, maybe this one's pretty good. And we got there.
Covered in bright tapestries and robes, just as many bright fabrics as possible. So it's kind of like a pile of fabric on top of Zilki.
Oh, you don't mean like a quilt. You mean literally like just every
like a little mound,
every bright shirt you could find.
Yeah. Walks with a big staff that has a bunch of jingles and bells, and everything is very lavish. A bunch of rings, just colorful and flamboyant, is the great Zilki.
So I want you to tell me how you came into this job. You were hired by a family in a town. A town that has been known to run off goblins and invasions relatively frequently. But then they came to you.
Yes.
The great Zilki. Tell me about that. Yeah, the great Zilki.
The great Zilki used to be a chef for some orcs. That was basically what the great Zilki did. The great Zilki was in a dead-end job, was just this line cook for these. Hey, look, no, the audience wasn't there. Zilki's a really good chef.
You know, it's a rough industry, but it's a fun job.
This is
okay?
A bad restaurant. This is a bad gig, okay? He's a really good chef in a bad gig, all right? I'm not saying all line cooks. I'm saying this line cook at a really bad, depressing gig. making food for an audience that doesn't care, that doesn't appreciate the effort you put into it, and are just mean in return. He's just getting one-star Yelp reviews from these guys, man. It was not a fun time, okay?
Over on the Goblinoid Yelp.
Yeah, but he found out one day that others would appreciate his flourishes. So he began to cook more, and he began to experiment more and read more, and that led to finding out more information. And sometimes he could pass it off as like little potions and poultices, like, oh, this will help your hangover, oh, this will make your stomach feel better. And he got known for that. So he bought a little wagon, and he's been touring out, you know, with his little mule and his little wagon, and he goes around from town to town, and they come to him and ask him to help them with certain problems. If like maybe their fields aren't growing as richly, or maybe the dam got a little bit blocked up, and Zilkey comes and gives them knowledge and helps them with their problems. And Zilkey simply arrived in this town when Zilkey was needed.
The job was sort of an unknown. You were told the graveyard has been dug up. Now there's a couple options for this. One of the more common is just animals. It does happen that sometimes the locals get spooked for no fucking reason. Sometimes it's a necromancer. Less common, thankfully. Wolves, more frequent than necromancers. And sometimes it's a beastie. You know, just as a broad classification. Something that isn't just wolves. Something... Once it was a carrion crawler. You saw one of those get up on land once? Ugly day. That was a rough time for Zilkey.
Zilkey was not amused by that day. No. Who is speaking to Zilkey right now? Who is giving Zilkey this information?
Fuck you, you prick. Fucking asking me for fucking names.
John the Mayor, come on, was it?
There you go.
Mayor Frank.
Mayor Frank, yeah, okay. Mayor Frank, you say, yes? You say that these corpses were simply dug out of the ground. You must take me to them. Show me where these corpses have been removed from the soil.
Mayor Alfred Booth.
Mayor Alfred Booth.
A lot of his authority came from an inheritance. There was his grandfather was sort of a baron of industry in the area. That industry remaining undisclosed because that would take too much effort for me to sort out.
It's the 13th century. It's farming, woods, or livestock. Maybe some.
You're right.
Pick one.
Yeah. So he farmed wood and livestock. The major concern is the will has a caveat to it. His grandfather was buried with sort of the medal of his station. He was, you know, former mayor, and he went down with that grand medallion, that one that looks wildly uncomfortable. If some people get medals and you're like, man, I should do something cool so I can get a medal. And then you look at a mayor and you're like, pass.
Can it be a sash?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge sash, and it's got basically like, if you wore it just direct horizontal, it would be the buckle on a belt. But instead, it's this giant, like, gaudy fucking brooch. Bigger, but same concept.
Yeah. It has to. Otherwise, it would just fall. It's going to have to attach here. So it's literally just a giant brooch with like a fancy ribbon.
Probably 3 pounds at least. Such a bad choice. But he was like, no, I'm taking it literally to my grave. So much so that the will includes a line stating that if it is removed from his grave, if there are grave robbers, 1 month to put it back. And then the will is nullified. Goods are liquidated. And the money is sent to a handful of charities handpicked by the Elder Booth.
Who stands to benefit? You know what? It does not matter. Zilkey's got this. I believe I know exactly where they are going, Mayor. Go ahead. Retire for the evening. Relax. I shall return with all the answers you seek, and you shall have for me 50 gold pieces. Your human ways are not important to me, not to the Grand Zilkey. Take Zilkey to this crime, and Zilkey will solve it for you.
Zilkey? With me, please. And the mayor leads you through town. The entire time, you are getting looks, because the mayor also has a sash. It is less gaudy, because
you know, Grandpa's sash was very expensive and they were not willing to drop that kind of coin a second time. Followed by a goblin wearing, what, like 14 sweaters of various bright colors, yes. carrying a staff of bells. Now, in D&D, that formatting, staff of bells, implies magic item. No, stick, bells.
Yeah, it's just a loud stick. It does nothing else.
Absolutely. Disadvantage to stealth rolls. That's the magic item effect.
Yeah.
That's it. So he brings you through, and he shows you, like, this entire time, Alfred Booth has been telling you about the theft of his grandfather's medallion. And you come into the graveyard and see maybe like every fourth or fifth grave is dug up.
Yeah.
There is a huge mausoleum built where he tells you this was my grandfather. This is the scene of the crime. This is where his body was taken from. And the door is like smashed in. I want you to give me an investigation roll.
First roll.
He's got a little monocle out. All right, it's a plus zero, but I rolled an 18.
Jen, I want you to describe to me what it looks like when a boar servant smashes through a marble door with their hands.
Oh, it was a kind of like a big servant. This is somebody who can hold two hands together and bash a door in.
Something large and blunt smashed these doors in with quite a lot of strength.
Particularly, you can see a sort of brownish smear. This is something like, this was not just blunt, this was by hand, and this bashing happened until those hands were a pulp. They smashed through stone to their own extreme detriment.
I am going to investigate this slime by tasting it.
I am going to roll nature, I suppose.
Okay.
19 plus 3 is 22.
Whoa!
A little bit coppery. Definitely tastes like blood. But the thing, the undertone that comes through is earthiness.
Earthiness. Ah. Yes, I was going to say that, yeah.
I know what I'm doing sometimes. Yeah. Not dirt.
Right. Earthy.
Yeah.
A certain umami.
Seems like if you simmered it with garlic, it would be fucking dope.
All right. Well, something that large and that uncaring about its own self certainly didn't try and cover its tracks walking away. So I'm looking for now drag marks, big footprints, whatever I can find leaving this area.
And you find your path relatively easily. In fact, one of the things you notice is it eventually converges. It looks like every single one of the graves, like I said, probably at this point, one in three graves in the entire yard has been dug up. And they all wind off in different directions. Some, like, you can see, like, a little trench. One got dug under the fence and, like, out. One through the gate. A couple of them, you can see bits where, like, the bit where the wrought iron post is, like, bent slightly because something got dragged over, hooked, and they just kept pulling until it gave.
Okay.
All of these disparate paths eventually coalesce into one single file track in the woods.
He would straighten up, crack his little shoulders, turn to the mayor.
Stand up tall and proud, 2'8". Zilkey does not see that the mayor proceeds back to his manor and does not worry about paying the goblin. He hopes this works. There is absolutely no faith.
Zilkey has all the faith and goes trudging into the woods, whistling happily.
So, after maybe like 3 hours journey, you're following this path and you occasionally have to like deviate a little bit. It goes like directly through a not shallow river, but like you would just drown, you know?
The great Zilkey does not swim.
Someone of human height would be like fine to go through you issues.
The great Zilkey is aware of his limitations.
There is
a huge tree in the way, and you can see like where moss is scraped away from just the corpse being dragged over. Everything is a complete mindless straight line until it reaches a clearing. Jen, do you want to tell me about the area where the Sovereign sort of set up shop?
It is a circular copse of trees. There's a clearing, but it's surrounded by the circular shape of trees. And if you look up and squint, there is tiny rays of sunlight making it through the leaves. Wait, are those leaves? Or are they materials? And when you get maybe 30 feet from the ring, you start to see, like, they look like dust motes. You know when you look at a beam of light, you can see, sort of see the dust that's flying around? These look a little bigger. And they start to, like, land on you.
He would bravely investigate. He would place a heavily, heavily clothed arm out, layered in many layers, and see what happens when one lands upon him.
So, relatively surprisingly, rapport spores do not involve any form of save. If they touch you, you are affected. So the moment you sort of like you're keeping back and you can see like the wind, the way it brushes through the trees, like you're kept relatively safe. You kind of like put your arm out, collect that little bit of dust, and you kind of come back and look at it. Jen, you're in his head.
How do you know what you know?
How do I know what I know? Well, Zilky.
What is your highest level of education?
Oh, well, I've Zilky did some trade school, and Zilky has had a lot of on-the-job experience.
Zilky, we have not encountered a Zilky.
Trade school is a new phenomenon for us.
All right, so he's just circling around. He's like, well, of course you have not experienced something like I. There is nothing as grand as the great Zilky. How can I assist you? Be easier if I could, of course, see you.
You don't need to see. You are him. We are him.
Well then, what can the great Zilky do for you all, I guess?
We must block out the sun.
We must block out?
The thing in the sky.
And he like looks up. He's just looking up at the sky. And like, what time of day is it right now?
We're going to say you came in like relatively early morning. So we're hitting like mid-afternoon. Sun's pretty fucking high.
Okay, so like occasionally a breeze will separate the canopy and you'll just catch a glimpse of the sun once in a while. He's just like looking up and he sees the sun. He looks up and he looks around. He sees the sun again and he can't be the sun. So it's like the trees? You have a problem with the trees?
While you're looking up, while you're investigating, you see like there are these branches that are bending at wrong angles. And like it's dark. The canopy is pretty thick. And then eventually the sun comes through. There's a shift in the canopy just enough that a bit of light hits and you see pink.
Oh, that's odd.
That's people meat.
Oh, what?
And you start, the closer you look, you start to recognize like those aren't leaves.
He's walked into the circle now. So to get a better look. So he's like walked into the circle and he's just turning around and he's realizing what he's seeing above him.
The next thing is you see an arm dangling down from the trees. It sways in the wind. And then you hear it next. You hear it crack the wrong way. And it blocks out the little light that was shining down on you. And you start to train your eyes starting at the top. And you start to see that there are bodies pinned to the insides of the trees, like bugs in a lab with pins. Their wings crucified around the wrong way of the tree. Their backs lined up against the bark.
Right, like a flesh cocoon, kind of, that they're building to block out the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one that you see is adhered by the head. A grand fungal mass, overwhelming like a helmet, holding these things maybe a foot, maybe 2 feet out, just far enough that like it can make use of the arms. The ones that are lower, the ones that are closer, you can see those like structures, almost fungal structures along the arms, holding them in these weird positions. Some of them bent entirely backwards just to hit the right spot, just to make sure that that shaft of light cannot possibly reach the forest floor.
Unbelievably upsetting. It's like in like an Indiana Jones movie where they would have all those mirrors set up to bring light in, but it's the reverse. There's all these flesh sacks set up to keep light out.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Horrifying. Zilky is definitely scared. The next thing he would immediately look for, because as far as Zilky's concerned now, this isn't something Zilky's going to deal with. This is something Zilky is going to escape. So can I see the sash?
Yeah. Since it's the newest part of the canopy, the great cap, the great umbrella, it is still moving. It is being pulled by each of the preceding set of hands up the length of the tree, and it is currently being put into place. You can hear the shushing of the leaves as the last body is being put into place, but you can see that glint from the brooch.
How high is it above my head right now?
What's just unreasonable enough to make you work for it?
Well, I'd be like, I'm like 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, 6 feet would be rough for you.
So it's like several lengths of people, I would say.
Yeah,
two people, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to put it like 15 feet up. This is actually formed like a dome.
Okay. So Zilky has been in some tough scraps before. And Zilky is used to being a small being around very powerful things that are scary. So Zilky takes a deep breath and focuses and begins to walk towards the tree or the collective or whatever he would describe that as, that has the mayor's sash.
The thing.
Well, I can see you all have done amazing things here. Zilky certainly approves with everything you've created, and I do believe Zilky may have some information that would help you make this even stronger. And he reaches up and taps the tree that has the sash. Yes, Zilky believes he can help you all accomplish this task of blocking out the orb. Would you like a demonstration?
Demonstration?
There are so many ways, after all, to block out light. And Zilky opens up his arms and his whole, all of his like multiple layers of fabric go wide and begin to billow as fog erupts out from him. And in 20 feet all around him, fog rises and completely obfuscates him in a moment. You just can't see him. He's just gone. You just hear his voice like, there are many things that can block out the great orb. And he's going to use that to then run along the backside of the tree, scamper up it, and go for the sash. In fact, you know what? Even better, when he vanishes into the fog, he's going to transform, because he's a druid, into a giant bat. So he can then just leap out, make a dive for it, and try and get away with it.
So, Jen, I'm going to have you make a roll. It's going to be technically a perception roll. I'm just double checking. Yeah. So what you're going to do is you're going to roll a d20 and add your wisdom to it.
So I got an 18 and then it's a plus 2, so 20.
Nice.
So you are just aware of this as it happens. You feel all of your spores. This fog like dampens it, both literally, I mean fog, and obviously in terms of your ability to feel what is around you. But the moment he takes to the air, there's a little scrabble on the tree that's a little hard to pick up. And then suddenly this huge flap of wings and that massive current in the air, you know exactly where it is. You don't know what has happened to it, but it is larger, and it is flying now.
I must know.
I like how we both are creatures that now have our own type of sonar to find each other right now.
That's pretty good. An arm shoots out for your neck.
Oh, what's my AC as a bat? Hang on. Wait, 1 second.
Oh, no, Aram. Okay. Aram, that's a grapple.
So what's my strength as a giant bat? Okay.
Jen, I'm going to have you roll at advantage with a athletics roll. Basically, this is going to be your attempt to grab him. So you're just going to add, you're going to roll twice and take the higher value and add your strength to it.
And you need to beat a 14 plus 3 is 17.
Oh, we got a 14.
I'm in the middle of these trees. I'm not free. I just got away from that grab. I've probably got three more to dodge.
That's what the advantage is basically from the trees. Suddenly there are these little shafts of light as those hands abandon that job and try to grab the bat as it flies through. And you just have an entire column. The path behind you is just arms seizing at your back.
Okay, I'm beating my little bat wings as hard as I can because I've still got some distance to go. Can I still hear them in my head?
Oh, you...
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, no.
Because you could never hear them.
Right.
They are in your head.
Right. They're just there.
This is not a sound. Shifting form did not matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. So I'm flying and thinking I'm escaping, but the voice is still always there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. As close as it ever was.
I sit in a tree. I think I've gotten far enough away. And I just... Little bat breaths I'm heaving up and down.
What do you wish?
Oh, well, the great Zoki simply wishes for knowledge and experiences and perhaps some coin here and there. That's what makes the great Zoki proud, pleased. What do you want?
We want to expand.
We want.
Well, Zuki also wants these things. It's just Zuki goes about them a different way. So, Zuki's not so much into blocking out the sun. And he can't help himself. What type of knowledge do you mean?
I'm gonna butt in real quick.
Yeah.
That word echoes.
Sun.
Lots of the things you've been grabbing as you've been like growing into these people by way of head. You've been pulling knowledge, and you've been learning, but mostly it's muscle memory, you know? It's things that are very, very deeply ingrained, unless they're, like, very recently dead. But the moment the word sun hits the mind, it echoes, and 1,000 synapses that have heard the word before all light up at once, and you know that's the orb. I hate it. The sun is the object that you have been resenting since you got up here.
All of the bodies, all of the heads, their mouths open.
It is uncoordinated. These hands, when they were grabbing at you, you can see that this is a forced movement. There is not finesse right now, and that hiss is real particular.
So I've turned back into like a goblin form. I've got this thing clutched to my chest. I'm in a tree. I drop down to the ground. Are they just everywhere now?
Oh,
you got the thing?
I thought I pulled the thing away. Did I not get it?
Oh, you had flown up there. You had gone past.
I couldn't get it free.
And then you were just, yeah. You're in there, like you can see it.
It is
maybe like three corpses away as they're all just like the last breath. The one that had the most air in it is just petering out and you can see it. It is like a swing and a hop, maybe, and you could grab it. And then 15 feet, honestly, you're small, you're built compact, goblins are squishy, you're wearing, honestly, by mass, more clothes than you are meat.
Right.
You could take the fall.
Ask again.
What do you wish?
I wish for many things, but right now, I wish for that sash.
And I would just point to it, just point right to the sash.
I want that. I want that shiny right there.
You hear another kind of cracking. You hear, like, kind of a slow lurch of the trees instead. It's too loud to be a breeze. It's, you hear bark breaking. Limbs start to come out from the backside of the tree. An underlayer under the bark starts to puff. Mycelium starts to expand at a logarithmic rate. A flush of a blue oyster mushroom, like as big as a wagon, emerges from the back of the tree. And it steps out, creaky and awkward, slow moving, looking the tree up and down at the progress.
Zilky watches as it looks up at the progress, it surveys, and then it finds you. And it traces the point, recognizing what you've gestured towards.
And it opens its mouth. Hallucination spores come pouring out of its mouth in swirls.
I think this is way too fucking cool to worry about the 5-foot range. Also, I think the 5-foot range is stupid.
It's like raining down, you know, because it's tall.
Yeah, exactly. It goes 5 feet out and then down, and then just spreads everywhere. Yeah.
So you need a DC 12 con save.
That's going to be a natural one.
That's
1 + 2 = 3.
You're mine.
Mechanically, the bit that I get to tell you is that you're poisoned for 1 minute and incapacitated. So, like, you got up and then immediately, like, you get that waft and you get, like, there's a gasp. And then your hand, like, first, like, seizes, almost like you're being electrocuted, and then just goes dead limp and you fall.
Yeah, I just remember falling towards like this blooming, like in slow motion, I'm falling, my arms out, back first, and below me, as the camera can see, there's just this eruption and bloom of different mushrooms. And I just kind of land in like this airbag of mushrooms and then are carried towards the sovereign.
Yeah, like an offering.
Yeah.
What does he see while he's unconscious? You have a minute's worth of hallucination to give him.
Oh, yes, I will happily do
this. Assuming that you don't, like, murder him.
No, you see, at first, in reverse, the town's butcher dragging the corpse of the previous mayor through the woods, like this very slow, arduous process. You would kind of know, like, just by trade of, like, the big leather apron, bloodstains, and, like, kind of the nature of this person that has to be the town butcher.
The apron that says, kiss the butcher?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're seeing the route. You're seeing how the body was dragged from the cemetery through the woods and transferred from set of hands to set of hands up to where it is. And then it flashes to the first person that was taken. It was a lumberjack. A lumberjack who was in the woods about to fell a tree. But the sovereign didn't want that to happen. Kind of enveloped the lumberjack with mycelium in his head through his ears first. And then the mushrooms started growing out of his nose and out his mouth.
This entire image is broadcast to you from the perspective of the mushroom, the one that did the feeling. So you see the man, and you feel yourself as a cloud entering any little orifice you can find, growing and seizing, grabbing a hold of every motion of that body.
And in that, as you absorb information from the lumberjack's head, you learn of a whole town. You learn of all the people they know and all the people that have passed away recently. And so the lumberjack heads to the cemetery and starts digging. And so you see over the course of this minute how the canopy came to be.
Just constructed one body at a time as they just sent more and more out, right? Right. And I'm being carried this whole time closer to both the sovereign and the sash, I would imagine. Like, I'm being taken to an area where they're both basically there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The sovereign's real fucking big. It can reach up and grab the sash.
Yeah.
Do I wake up just kind of on this bed of mushrooms looking up at all this?
Just that giant mushroom face ahead of you, looming over you, and just over the tremendous shoulder, that glint of gold.
Right.
Mocking you.
It observes you quietly.
Well, that sounds like quite a plan. And he would just kind of like lean up and like stretch a little teeny bit. I wish I could help, but that doesn't sound like something that's got room for someone as amazing as Zilky.
Oh, you can help.
You can help.
And you can feel the mushrooms start to pull at your clothing.
Drapery.
Finery.
At my clothing? No. Okay, Zilky's had quite enough. Zilky is like, the great Zilky doesn't go on second for anyone, and slams his fists together, and he's gonna cast Wither and Bloom at third level.
What is that?
You invoke both death and life upon a 10-foot radius sphere centered on a point within range. Each creature of your choice in that area must make a constitution saving throw, taking 2d6 necrotic damage on a failed save or half as much damage on a successful one. Non-magical vegetation in that area withers. So he's making a 10-foot basically ball right at the base of this tree, just going to take it all out and then hit everything else he can in the meantime and hope that thing just falls so he can run and get the hell out of here.
Okay, so Jen, going to make a constitution save.
Okay.
In your case, that is just roll the d20 plus 2 for your constitution.
Mm-hmm. I am so scared for Zilky right now. I have not been so terrified.
Ooh, you said plus 2?
Yeah.
It's a 19.
Yeah, my save DC is like 13.
So you're going to take half damage from this. So Aram, you can roll that.
I'm casting at a higher level, so it's actually 3d6. So that's going to be a total of 12, and half of that is 6 points of damage.
Yeah.
Ooh, to me.
So you're sitting happy at 54 instead of 60.
But you also wither.
Yeah.
There's a little bit where basically the moisture, the little processes, every one of your little spores just starts to kind of stop.
It hurts.
And you wither a little bit.
Yeah.
More importantly, behind you, you can feel as your spores, your servants, start to take on more of the weight as the tree starts to give out behind you.
Mm-hmm.
The grass on which you stand dies, turns brown, and crackles under your feet.
But what does this do? Loosens a couple of the servants from the trees.
What do you want to do with the servants?
And you hear the unnatural cracking of their spines as they try to stand up and walk towards Zilky.
So, like, Zilky's seeing. So the tree's coming down. My plan's working. I'm seeing where that thing's going to land. I'm going to be able to grab it. But then all around me, doom, doom, as these little other spores land and begin marching towards me. Oh, fuck hell.
And as it's cracking, like, the ones from the top are the ones dropping down like fucking shock troopers. You see the legs at the bottom, the corpses hanging in the first five-ish feet. They lean forward. As the tree starts to fall, the legs start to try to take the weight.
Woo!
Zoki's gonna hold, oh God, he's got one chance. Zoki's gonna hold ground, wait until that sash is in his hand, and then he's gonna cast Thunder Wave the second he has it in his hand.
So Jen.
Mm-hmm.
Rom actually just took his turn, so you can feel free to act.
Yeah.
Before that Thunder Wave is gonna go off.
Let's see.
The network would probably feel the crackling energy building, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think this particular sovereign has seen this before, but is sensing danger.
No, there was maybe one or two of your bodies are casters of some sort. So you have just enough to feel it, just enough attachment to arcane energies to know something is going on.
You feel them twitch and pull. There's maybe not even information, just this instinctual reaction for those bodies to pull away and like, wait a minute, something's not right.
Mm-hmm. One or two of them actually beginning sort of the somatic components, just moving their hands in these odd gestures at their side.
Fitfully trying to form counterspell.
Yeah, so the servants just like head toward you and are trying to shoot pacifying spores your face.
All right. Oh, God.
Okay, so we're going to make this a disadvantage save just because, like, a bunch of them. Standard deal.
No, that's fair. Okay.
The DC is 11.
Okay, that is 9 plus 2. It's 11.
You make your save. This thing goes over, and there's a moment where your eyes just glaze a little bit, where every instinct you have to do violence, to act, just flees your body.
Why am I trying so hard? Is this flesh canopy really that bad?
Like, and it was at the phrase flesh canopy that your brain sort of writes itself.
Right.
That's why I'm mad about this. I don't like the flesh canopy. That's terrifying.
What the hell am I thinking? It's a flesh canopy.
That's bad.
Suck. Is that thing in my hands yet? I want that thing so badly.
Okay.
Why am I trying so hard? He's so stubborn. If Zoki wasn't stubborn, Zoki would have just cut and run by now. But Zoki can't stand the fact that someone would be like, well, Zoki couldn't deliver, you know? Okay. So he'll go through hell.
One last thing before your turn.
Yeah.
Jen, do you want to take any actions as the sovereign proper?
Oh, yeah.
You've acted through your minions. I don't know if the sovereign is the sort to get their hands dirty directly, but...
Oh, we're going to use a fist. We're going to...
We're
going to
fist the goblin.
Yeah, we're going to move an arm, but you can see that the delineated fingers become sort of mycelium, armored mycelium blob. Like, it becomes a club, basically. And swings like dinosaur speed fist at you. Like, you know it's coming. You can see it, but it's just so large and
majestic. It's so big it's hard to dodge no matter what, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to make an attack roll at plus 3. So just d20 plus 3.
My armor class is currently 13.
Oh, we got a 16. So plus 3. Yeah, 16. Okay, so the first one was 9, and then the next one is 6.
Oof, 15. So you're going to take 15 points of damage split between bludgeoning and poison as this thing basically, if it didn't form a huge club, it would almost be a backhand. Just this large lumbering swing bats you across the ground.
This cracks me. Knocks all the wind out of me. Like, oh, this little goblin just panting.
And then there's that deep inhale immediately after the wind's knocked out of you, and you choke.
Because of all the spores.
The spores that came loose when it hit you start poisoning you.
All right. So I just, like, wobbly get up onto my little goblin legs.
It's close enough. You can make that little hop.
I will. I'll make a little goblin leap.
You have like six guys trying to, on their back, hold up a massive tree. This was not going to work at any point.
No.
And they're slowly, like, despite their best efforts, being crushed under the mass of it. And that mare is getting closer and closer.
I'm like on my tippy toes with my little goblin hands outstretched like a raccoon. Like, gimme, 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 gimme.
And you get it.
Thunder, and then Thunder Wave. Don't even hesitate. Grab it. Hands in. Thunder Wave.
I got a 12, but what do I...
Plus 2 for your constitution.
Oh, you just 14. Got it.
Okay, roll your damage around.
All right, so my damage is 48 for a total of 18 points of damage as this wave of force just explodes out of me with a sound as loud as a thunderclap.
Okay, so the servants have like 9 or 10 hit points apiece. So even with the handful that made the save, 2 of them go flying back and crush into trees and just shatter. The other 2 like hold their ground and try to lean forward, but the moment they do, you shattered every bone in their body. Like they were too close to a huge concussive blast and they just flop.
You hear the screams of the entire entity. Because they all feel it.
Oh,
and
right.
Because you have one spore inside your head, you can hear them screaming.
Bonus action, disengage.
Fair enough.
Run, 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 run. Just, I have this thing clutched in my hand, and I am running as fast as I can.
So you make a hard break for it. What's the move speed on a sovereign? Let me double check this.
Faster than me. Well, I have a walking speed of 30.
Speed is 30 feet for this.
Okay. Basically.
And next round, I'm going to transform into like a wolf.
Okay. Yeah. Then, yeah, even if the sovereign starts pursuing, like you, it basically, for the first handful of strides, there's these huge lumbering, thudding steps.
Oh my God.
And then you just turn into a wolf and make a break for it. And once you gain that speed, you leave it in the dust. And you still, at the back of your head, just as if it was right next to you, hear that bellow, the roar. Anger? Annoyance, possibly?
I would sprint into town. Find the mayor.
Yep.
Just leap up onto his desk as the wolf, right? Just crash onto his desk, right? And then turn back into myself. Here.
What? And they're like, he's in the middle of trying to tell you off and the thing gets thrust in his face. Good, good. I just need to... And he gets up. He looks over. He just shouts to someone, give him his money. However much it was, 20,
50,
whatever.
50, it was 50.
50. Give him 50 then. And he runs. The mayor bolts and just gets to the mausoleum, throws it in there. Silky, you take your money, and I imagine you don't stay in town.
I've already packed up my wagon. Are you kidding me? I am finding the furthest place, wherever it is colder to go than here, I am going. Because this isn't getting stopped, and it's not my problem.
You leave the town. You take your money and you run. There's nothing they can do as the canopy resumes construction. They have to find a new tree to base it around. And eventually, the graveyard runs out. The sovereign finds ways.
What? How? What does the sovereign do? What is the grand plan here?
It lets you go. Because
it's kind.
Because when you were a wolf, your fur hooked onto some spores.
Right.
Not to mention all the layers
of your sweater. Exactly.
Yeah.
So as you're sweating and you're leaving town and you're just like with your mule, let's get out of here. The tiniest pin of a mushroom starts growing on the back of your neck. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for a DM deep dive into Myconids. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster. You can also listen to ad-free episodes and bonus content by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. We were joined by Jen De La Vega. You can find her on Twitter at Randwitches. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.